Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back with you here Thursday, February the 12th, 2026, 12 and a half minutes past the hour. Glad to have you out there. And we were talking in hour number one about the news story that broke yesterday about a cameraman being thrown down at OSU by one of the professors who was trying to interview Gordon Gee, and where this all goes from here. Go ahead, caller.
Did you have a chance to look during break at that video I sent you?
Yeah, I did. I saw that video yesterday.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I was shocked that Rocky Ratliff is apparently representing the professor, it looks like.
Oh, is he? I did not know that.
That was in the footage that I sent you.
Oh, really?
At the very end, he had a comment there. So maybe you can get him on the show.
Yeah, I must have missed that.
But at any rate, from what I saw, not knowing what led up to it, I wonder what provoked that guy to attack the guy with the camera, you know?
Well, it seemed as...
It doesn't look too good for the guy.
You know, it seemed as... It seemed as if he was unhappy that they were trying to get words from Gee, is what it looked like. But I don't know, I wasn't there.
Well, that guy that was beside the guy in the red coat, the attacker, that wasn't Gee. The cameraman, it looked like, was maybe trying to get access between the doors that were behind the guy in the red coat, the professor.
No, there.
So that sure didn't look like Gordon Gee.
Well, there is more footage. Gee was wearing a cap. I mean, it was him. You see that at one point.
He's got a beard. I didn't recognize him. Jeez.
Yeah, he's got a cap on. He's the shorter person in the video.
He's always worn a cap and bow tie.
Yeah. Well, when I've seen him, he usually doesn't have a cap on, but I think that's kind of...
Well, if you're out and about, et cetera.
Right. You know. So he's got a cap on, and he's coming back from doing a lecture, apparently, and that's why these professors are with him. But, what did Rocky say? No, I missed that part because I didn't have the sound up.
Oh, geez. I only went through it once. I was just kind of shocked to see him. So I need to look through it again to see what he was talking about.
So he's representing the professor?
That's what it appeared to be, yeah. From what I gleaned from it, something about open access, et cetera, and that. But, you know, let me call. I think he's representing the cameraman, okay?
Oh, so the camera. Well, that's different.
Say,
yeah, the camera.
Yeah. I wanted to make sure. I wasn't sure if I said the professor or whatever. But the cameraman, I think he was representing him. And, you know, it is an open campus. I had a very similar thing happen to me when I was doing a documentary about COVID, and I was on campus. And where the student union was, they had a big pavilion set up, and there were a bunch of women in there, and this effeminate guy leading them, and he got his panties in a bunch because I was taking pictures. Well, don't do that, etc. I said, you're out in the open. This is an open campus, etc. So his panties were in a bunch. He took his class, and it was like a duck with the ducklings following the mom and dad. And they went inside. The next thing I know, he had campus police on me. I couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe it. Some of these people are just, you know, unbelievable. But
well,
the fact of the matter is, time you go outside the confines of your home, you should be acutely aware everybody's got a camera. So be on your best behavior.
So I guess your take on this, and correct me if I'm wrong, these were not journalists because they're not with a major news organization, but the professor, regardless.
A reputable, verifiable organization, right. I would say, then you are part of the media.
Right, but
otherwise, you're just a freelance, you're a stringer. Well, even stringers are connected with a media source, otherwise they wouldn't have any way to generate revenue.
Right, but I don't think that's what...
Kind of like what the paparazzi are. The paparazzi always trying to get images in people in a compromising situation.
Right, but I don't think that's what these people were. One was a blogger, and one was a documentarian.
I only saw the one that was there that got attacked. So I don't know what the capacity was. But from what little, I don't know what led up, if there were words exchanged, fights.
No, they were just trying to get to Guy.
But it seemed as though, good grief, man, the guy attacked the guy with the camera, and it looks like he's got a lot of, as Ricky Ricardo would say, he's got a lot of splaining to do.
Well, I think his defense here is that you didn't have an interview with Gordon Guy. You're approaching him in the hallway. Why are you doing this? And don't come up on us like this. You're not NBC.
Yeah, if he would have articulated that without getting physical, that would have been fine. But he chose to get physical.
Right, and I think that's the point here that I was making earlier in the show is that I'm not sure what they're doing as journalism, because what information did they get from Gordon Guy? I don't think they got anything.
Again, there's such a thing that has been lost. It's courtesy. You know, you ask someone, well, I'm here, could I talk with Guy? And if the guy says no, well, who are you to tell me no, that I can't do an interview with Gordon Guy? You know?
But what if he says no?
What if he says no?
What if Guy says no?
Oh, Guy says no? Well, then, hey, you know, you're up the creek without a paddle, man.
Right, but see, that's the difference between what certain people do now. What they do is they take these kids...
Certain people.
Well, I guess I don't know what you'd refer to them as. Anybody with a camera.
Let's say Colleen Marshall was there. Now,
right.
you know there would be a better reaction, and she would probably get the interview because
right.
she's a known entity.
Right, but I also believe Colleen would not be there had she not put in the request to interview Guy, because she knows that if it's a touchy subject, which... This was pretty much about the Les Wexner thing, and also about apparently
about the renaming, taking Wexner.
Yes, but apparently now, if you read it again, I wasn't there. But one of the guys, apparently, neither one of these cameramen were not affiliated with each other. One of them wanted to talk about Wexner. Now that's the one who did not get thrown down, and the other one wanted to talk about, I think, it said student loan debt. Now, the one who got thrown down...
Then it's fair to say, the one that got thrown down was covered by the other guy who didn't get into Donnybrook.
Right, but here's what's odd about the situation. Apparently, the guy who was asking the Les Wexner questions, he did speak. The other guy apparently never got... to ask any questions. So I'm not really sure what was going on here, and I don't understand if he seriously wanted to talk to Gordon Guy about college loan debt. I don't know why he wouldn't put an interview request in. Why would he just approach him in a hallway? I'm sure that's something Gordon Guy would talk about.
And we don't know because I didn't hear anything there leading up to it or anything before that. We only saw the actual incident. It could have very well been, and just from what little exposure I've had with Guy, he would have probably said, I tell you what, be happy to answer your questions. Let's set an appointment, call my office, get my assistant to schedule a time, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you have. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if that would be his take on it, because he's leaving from a function. He's a very popular guy and has probably a very, very packed schedule and a time frame to do stuff.
Right, but there's nobody else in this hallway, and I think, I don't know how they got there, but I guess that's when they thought...
The fact of the matter, it looked as though he was leaving from a function going to possibly another function.
Well, I think he was going to the parking lot, because at one point in the story, it's... Apparently, there's something in here I'm trying to find. It's a long story. But Guy apparently... Let me find the thing here at the end. The guy who was asking about Wexner said Guy handled the questions like a professional bull, but said Guy did not try to prevent Perez from assaulting Newman. So,
Guy compared to that, who was the professor that was assaulting?
His name's Perez. Perez.
Perez. Okay. You know, Perez looked to be at least one and a half, if not two times, the mass of Guy. Guy is not a very massive individual.
No. But I guess. See, I don't understand. This story is very weird to begin with, because the cameraman has said they were not affiliated. They were asking about two different things. But the cameraman who did not get thrown down is the one posting the video of the cameraman who did get thrown down, and the cameraman who didn't get thrown down is doing all the speaking. But apparently they weren't affiliated. So I don't understand this from the top. It's a very odd story, and he also says Guy handled it like a professional, but I haven't seen the footage of Guy answering any of these questions. Now, it does...
What do you mean by the person that characterized it as Guy acting as a professional?
Right, he calls him a professional, but I haven't seen the footage yet of the questions.
Well, you don't... What does he mean? Did he act like a professional when he was there and didn't say anything while Perez was manhandling this other guy?
I don't know, but I do know that this is okay. Here's what it is.
There was never an interview.
Right, but here's the story. Let me get this story in here so we actually have what happened. Burns, who is the one who did not get thrown down, regularly tries to interview politicians and prominent figures in Ohio about controversial topics by walking up to them in the hallways of the State House and Columbus City Hall. He caught Guy as the former Ohio State president was coming out of a men's bathroom. After the incident, the two attempted to further question Guy, but were blocked from an elevator by Christopher Green, the associate director of the Chase Center. In the video, Green shouts, "You are assaulting me," as Burns attempts to enter the public building's elevator. The two tried to follow Guy and Green outside by going down the stairs. In his blog, Burns said he was trying to question Guy about Les Wexner, and I guess Guy did not want them following him to the parking lot.
Well, there you go.
Right, so I don't know. I mean, was the cameraman right? He didn't even get to ask a question. I don't think anybody should be assaulted, but, you know, if you're coming out of the bathroom, I wonder what Gordon Guy has to say about all this.
You have to remember, any, let's say, person with a camera, if they're from ABC, the majors, or the minors, the person that they're targeting and they want to get words from, sound bites from, they always have the option, no comment, or not now, or whatever. And if the person going after a story or trying to capture somebody off guard or whatever, if they don't like it, well, that's tough. That's the nature of the game.
But let me just say this, because I think this is the point. I don't think Colleen Marshall would be waiting outside the bathroom, and I think that's a difference. But to be clear, this professor, I don't know why it turned to violence. I don't get that.
Well, that's the major issue right there. What set this guy off? Why did he attack this guy? It doesn't appear to be any provocation other than the fact the guy didn't like the camera guy.
Well, You know, that's what it is, and I guess Rocky is representing you.
Hopefully,
say, but,
yeah. Okay. Double check that. I'll double check it. It looked. I was shocked. They cut away to Rocky, and he's talking, and my mind wasn't processing it. But I'm going to take another look at that. I'm pretty sure he's representing the camera guy.
Oh, there you go. You know, it doesn't take long, I guess.
Well, hey, you know, it's a wild and crazy world out there.
It certainly
Things
is.
Things are out of control, and it's just a rotten shame. Too many feral people breeding feral people, you know?
All right.
Hey, do it better tomorrow.
All right. Well, it was an interesting story to talk about. That's for sure. It certainly is something that I think people are interested in, and it does bring into question, what is journalism? What are you able to do? What should you be able to do? And I think that's fascinating on a lot of levels. But I don't know of anybody who wants to be interviewed coming out of the bathroom, but I wonder what Gordon Gee has to say about all this. I guess that's the $50 million question here. How does he feel about how this all has transpired? But it really, I don't even know if it's a Gordon Gee story anymore at this point. It's more about this professor and this cameraman. But I can't understand in this story what a lot of this doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Go ahead, caller.
Independent journalism is a constitutionally protected activity, and you don't need to work for anyone to be considered a journalist. There are plenty of journalists that don't work for anyone. They're called freelance.
I think you're right. I think you're right. And I think this was a strange situation. I don't know where it's going to lead, but it's very interesting.
And I mean, it's up to the consumer of the information that these journalists, and I think people need to be careful when they attach that title to themselves, because you have a higher level of responsibility and thus liability. But just because you don't collect a regular paycheck for writing stories doesn't make you any less of a journalist than someone else.
I think you're right. Hey, I think we have a call coming in, but thanks for calling.
Sounds good. Take care, Scott.
Bye-bye. All right. Well, that's a very interesting point. And I think, you know, people can call. I think more journalists, the better. Because the more people we have covering things somewhere in the middle, we're going to find the collective truth. If we have nobody covering anything, we're not going to know anything. So it's a good thing to have journalism out there. And I'm willing to call anybody a journalist. I just don't know if you get a lot of good information getting somebody as they're coming out of a bathroom. But if that's how you do it, that's how you do it. You shouldn't put your hands on anybody, I guess, is the point that I would make. I don't think that is ever a good idea. Well, as we finish out the morning this morning, I'm so glad to be joined by our guest who is on the line, because he has been on this program before. A matter of fact, I saw him last October at Mary Ellen Withrow's birthday party, but I have never talked to him as the running mate, the official running mate, the lieutenant governor selection of the Democratic candidate for governor of Ohio, Dr. Amy Acton, joining us now, former head of the Democratic Party here in the state of Ohio, David Pepper. David, how are you?
I'm great. Good to be back with you, Scott, in my new role.
Yes, and
good to hear your voice.
Yeah, tell us how this all came to be. How were you chosen, and when did this become a possibility?
Well, you know, as you, I think, know, I was a big fan of Dr. Acton and was trying to help early on, because I think she's such a phenomenal candidate for the state, and I think voters are seeing that very clearly. And then as I was doing that, she began a process of looking for the lieutenant governor. And as you'd expect, you know, ran a full process, and even though I was helping her, I was walled off from the process, and she interviewed a lot of great people, and so ultimately I was honored that the group and she ultimately decided that they thought I'd be a good fit. So I was honored to join the ticket, and we're off and running. And you know, I joined it because I think she'd be a phenomenal governor. I believe she would start solving the problems that people are so frustrated by. And I'm very eager to work with her. You know, we'll talk about today, but on everything from healthcare to energy bills, you name it. You know, she's very dedicated to solving those problems. And I've been out a lot myself, as you know, in different capacities, and I've been hearing the same things, and I'm really excited to work with her to deal with all those challenges that everyday Ohioans are feeling in their lives.
Were you told why you were the person picked?
Was I told? Yeah, I mean, I think they thought that I brought, you know, I was in government myself at the local and level, and I think they thought when it comes to governing, I have experience like she does, and I could help make sure that we're leading the state in a good direction. And I'm sure it helped that I also have been out, you know, in the state a lot in different capacities and have a network I bring. So I think it was a combination of my political experience, but also what I you know, one thing that, and you'll get, the voters will get to know Amy over time, you want to win elections, of course, but her number one priority is governing the state and improving lives of Ohioans. And I think the thing about me that maybe gets lost, you know, it, for people beyond Cincinnati, because they don't know me as well, is I was in office. I was a local council member. I was a county commissioner. I was in those offices, especially county commission, during the Great Recession. So I actually have experience trying to help people get through tough times. And I'd say maybe of all the different things that I've done, that was the part of my work that she thought, this is what we need in office. So obviously I'm here to try and help win the election, but I think from what Dr. Acton told me, it was my experience on the ground and using the levers of government to help everyday people battle costs and other challenges that was the experience she was looking for to help her govern if the voters ultimately decided to choose her and myself and for governor and lieutenant governor. So a lot of it was that governing experience and knowing that we could both hit the ground running and start solving problems and not have to learn something from scratch.
For those of us who have not had a chance to meet her in person as of yet, what is she like in person?
You know, anyone who watched her press conferences with Mike DeWine already should know that's what you see is what you get. Very real, very authentic, you know, connects really well with people, listens to people, and is just concerned about solving problems. So the woman that people admired so much then, that's who she is. And I think, and that's not that hasn't changed, that won't change. So I think that person that people admired, and it was across party lines, it was all ages, all parts of the state, that really is who she is up close. And a lot of that, you know, I think her, one thing people should know is that was shaped by a child who grew up in Youngstown under real challenges and had to overcome so many. And I think it's made her real. I think it's made her, you know, as she tried to do then, like put the hard cards on the table and put the information out there and allow everyone to do their best with that information and make their own lives better. And there's an empathy that she brings to people she talks to. You know, when she has events around the state, which she does all the time, people all line up to tell her their stories. And a lot of politicians, I've seen this in my prior roles, they show up to an event and they give a speech and they leave. They don't say hi on the way in, and they leave on the way out. She's often the last person to leave because she's talking and listening. After she's done talking with the speech, she's talking one-on-one with every single person who showed up, and they wait in line, and she's the last to leave. So she's someone who I think it really is the case that she built a real bond with Ohioans in that role. She values that bond, and so every single event, you see it play out in, not just the fact that there are a bunch of people listening to a speech, but afterwards, it's the one-on-one time that I think people walk away saying, wow, she really heard my story. She really, you know, sympathized with the fact that I'm struggling on this issue or that issue. And it's that interpersonal connection, I think, that really does make her authentic and unique.
Hard to believe we're under 9 months to the election now. It's right around the corner. What do you expect to see from the campaign in the next 9 months?
Yeah, it is. Thanks for stressing me out. Yeah, 9 months. It's really, it's on us. I think you'll see, I don't want to overstate it, but I think you'll see a lot more of what you're seeing now. You know, every day Dr. Acton gets in a Jeep and drive somewhere in Ohio, for the most part, and is listening to everyday Ohioans in figuring out how to make their lives better. And what do we hear? We hear, you know, about utility bills. We hear about healthcare costs, premiums going up. You know, we hear about medical debt. And so I think what you'll see on our side is a very grassroots campaign that really doesn't know any bounds. It's in small towns, big cities, red, blue. Events reflect people from all walks of life. And if you're watching closely, you'll see that it's been going on for a long time. And I think it's one reason she's doing so well. This campaign is really connected to the people at the local level. And I think what you're seeing on the Vivek Ramaswamy side, and I'm going to be polite about this, but I think you're seeing almost the exact opposite. I mean, he is famously now circling the state in this fancy corporate jet. You know, we'll literally go from Columbus to Akron, land the plane, apparently go to speak in an event, take off, fly home. I mean, honestly, not something I've ever really witnessed before. You know, I got up this morning and I drove from Cincinnati to Columbus. That's kind of what you do when you're campaigning. So it's just, I think he's going to probably try and adjust, because there's sort of very high-flying, very sort of, it almost feels like he still thinks he's running for president. He's running this very odd elite campaign that just, I think, feels out of touch. And then you start to hear what he says about things, and it is out of touch. I mean, he said that Medicaid and Medicare were mistakes. He it's clear he wants to, frankly, get rid of them. That's how he talks about it. He tweeted about a few months before entering the race. He said he wanted to, I think he wants to dismantle them, is the way I word it. He said before he entered the race, he tweeted that the reason Ohioans are struggling is because they're mediocre and they're lazy, or there's a culture of mediocrity, whatever he said. He thinks that the way we'll solve what is a crisis of child care expenditures is to expand the school day from 3 to 4, as if that's going to just wipe away the problem. So I think he's sort of campaigning in this way that seems out of touch. So no surprise, so many things he says, I think the average Ohioan scratches their head thinking, boy, this guy doesn't know my life. This guy doesn't know my community. I don't know where he's going, but it's nowhere near here. So my guess is that they're going to try and fix that, because I think after a year plus in, that whole vibe he's given is really not going very well for him, versus a doctor, not a politician, who goes town to town and really listens to people and is proposing solutions that help people deal with the challenges of everyday life.
On Tuesday, Dr. Acton and yourself gave a press conference in Columbus on Medicaid, and I want to read this just as it is because I think it's an interesting story. Presumptive Democratic gubernatorial nominee Amy Acton said Tuesday that she supports work requirements for Medicaid, bucking, many in her party who have long fought Republican attempts to set up such rules in Ohio. Acton, a former state health director, noted to reporters during a downtown Columbus news conference that most of the 3 million or so Ohioans who get free or reduced cost health coverage via Medicaid, roughly a quarter of the state's population, are already working. But we need to have the requirements and easy ways to do it, Acton added, which means more good workforce training and more other things that we're trying to develop. Now, Democrats have often fought such attempts, arguing that work requirements are a costly administrative burden that will result in Ohioans losing health coverage without meaningfully increasing employment. So this was kind of a story. What do you make of this?
So I just want to bring the broader context back before we get into that issue. That was one question during the press conference. The main story was, we are hearing everywhere that health costs are just really overwhelming people, from drug prices to the higher premiums to debt, the medical debt that's leading to bankruptcy to, I mean, you saw stories on this a few months ago, to really aggressive collections practices that are already making a bad situation worse. So just want to be clear that the main purpose of the press conference was laying out that this is what we're hearing everywhere, and a governor can actually take on these issues. And so we laid out that the key priorities for us will be relieving medical debt for a whole lot of Ohioans, which is something other governors are doing. It's something that mayors are doing. There are ways you can use the power of the state to reduce drug prices or push for more transparency in how insurance companies or hospitals set prices or bill citizens. We can take on the collections practices. We can take on surprise billing. And there are ways that states are also doing everything they can to alleviate these increases in premiums. So just to be clear, that was the overall point of the press conference. But, yeah, as she said, you know, the truth is, and this is one of these issues that gets bandied back and forth, her main point was to emphasize that, yes, most Medicaid recipients are already working. Let's be very clear on that. Most of the folks who aren't working on Medicaid aren't because they can't or they're looking for work. These requirements are clearly coming through both state and federal law. To the extent you have people who can work on Medicaid, they should be working. But her main point was, because here's the risk is, and we've seen this in other states, the risk is that sometimes the administrative burden of these requirements or the process of getting a job are burdensome, and people do end up losing their Medicaid. And what she was trying to emphasize there is the requirements are clearly coming. We need to work very, very hard to connect people who are on Medicaid to job opportunities and also not allow the administrative hurdles that come from that kind of process to mean people lose their Medicaid when they're in good faith trying to work. So that was sort of the conversation, but it was part of a much bigger conversation. Let's be very clear. Everything we were saying is in contrast to somebody who literally says Medicaid and Medicare are mistakes, and it's pretty clear to me that his intent, as he said, he sort of talked about repeatedly over the years, is to dismantle these kind of programs that are lifeline to millions of Ohioans getting Medicare, Medicaid, and other support.
You know, and I think there is a big distinction there. It was just kind of interesting because this is a fairly new story, recent development. I was talking with somebody last night who's run for Democratic office three times, and definitely a supporter of Dr. Acton. But when we went through this story, they said, you know, I'm not sure if I'm a fan of that. I'm not sure if I like that. And I think that's why it became a story.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously there's strong, there are different opinions on it. And I think the biggest concern is that in some states, when work requirements exist, the process of the administrative process of working that through means people who would be entitled to Medicaid don't get it. And that is a concern. We're talking here about a doctor, so she's as concerned about that as anybody. So her main point at press conference was, you know, this is going to be, it's pretty clear this is going to be the federal rules in the near term. And so that's clear. And Ohio has already sought this as well. This is going to be the future one way or the other. And what our commitment is to figure out the single best ways out there to make sure, to the extent there's a work requirement, that we are connecting people who can work to job opportunities so they both have a job and Medicaid, and not losing, as I think a lot of people would be concerned. What we don't want anybody to lose Medicaid who can work, who simply are not getting through the administrative process, or who simply can't get a job because it's not available in their area. So we're going to be working on ways to make sure that people don't fall off the rolls for that reason. And Dr. Acton's as concerned as anybody that has happened in other states, and it's something that I think with smart governance we can keep from happening here.
So,
and by the way, one thing that's very clear overall is we have to do a better job generally of getting Ohioans, again, whether or not they are eligible for Medicaid, into the 21st century jobs that right now are often unfilled because we have not done a good enough job of getting people the skills and the education they need or other types of skill training. And so this is also part of that overall agenda of always improving the Ohio-based workforce. So we literally are taking on the jobs that need to be filled in the 21st century. This fits right into that agenda.
So before we move on to the next topic, so is it fair to say that this is not necessarily something Dr. Acton wants to do, put in work requirements? She just sees that this is on the horizon from the federal government, and we need to be ready for it. Is that fair to say?
No, I think she said for Medicaid, she supports, you know, a work requirement. But it's also, as we've said, it's on its way. It's coming. It's clearly part of the big bill. I guess they call it the big beautiful bill. It's clearly something Ohio is seeking, and she will work with that new law and make sure that we get Ohioans connected to jobs and make sure that we do everything we can to minimize any loss of Medicaid because of the administrative burdens that come from that.
Gotcha. A lot of people right now, including our governor, Governor DeWine, are talking about Springfield and ICE. And at this point, Governor DeWine was on CNN last Thursday, I believe it was. This was the quote. He said, speaking of the Haitians, he said, if they lose their temporary protected status, then they can no longer work and the companies can't employ them. That's a blow to the economy. It's a blow to the state. We need them. And somebody who doesn't speak out a whole lot politically, First Lady of Ohio, Fran DeWine, said she was happy this week that the Haitians in Springfield were given a reprieve from the federal order that removed their protective status on February the 3rd. What do you make on Governor and Mrs. DeWine's take on this, and how do you and Dr. Acton feel about what's going on in Springfield?
Well, I think the DeWines have a long-standing tie to Haiti, and so they're speaking sort of from the heart about the population in Springfield, and I think the court made very clear that what was being talked about just isn't legally possible. Hopefully that creates some stability around the issue, because there was a lot of uncertainty. And so we'll see what happens. But you know, it's obviously, this is a cause that's been very important to Governor DeWine for years. And you know, I think he and Mrs. DeWine are speaking from the heart about it.
Is this, how does Dr. Acton and yourself feel about what's going on in Springfield?
Well, I think... I would say that we're waiting to see what happens. I think Dr. Acton sort of respects what Governor DeWine has said on the issue, and the question would be, if something changed, you know, how would that play out? And I don't think we know that yet, and I think Dr. Acton's made very clear that overall, the broader immigration problem is one that Washington, D.C. has just failed to solve, and that the federal government needs to come up with a broader approach to immigration that secures our borders, but also treats people in this country with due process and humanely. And the other thing that's been so clear is, and I think Governor DeWine has actually said this well as well, to the extent, you know, and we don't know what's going to happen, but we've seen other states, to the extent you have federal agencies in Ohio, they should be operating under the same rules of transparency and due process and safety as any local and state agency. And I think that Mike DeWine has said that very well, and I know Dr. Acton agrees with that. That her number one job as governor, she says all the time, would be to keep people safe in Ohio, and that if that's going to happen, you do need to have a clear understanding and some transparency, and kind of that people who are here with some federal mission need to sort of follow the same rules of the road as any good local police department, as any good state agency would. And when you don't have that, I think it's less safe for Ohioans, and it's also less safe for everyone in law enforcement when it's not clear what the rules are, what the protocols are, what the accountability might be. And I think the Governor DeWine has said that very well, and she certainly agrees with that.
At this point, is the feeling that the way the Haitians are behaving and have come to Springfield, is that the proper way things should have been done and are being done?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they came here legally, and they came here under clear rules, and I think that the mayor and governor of the mayor of Springfield and the governor sort of worked to have them here, I think, and the businesses there. And that was all done when they were deemed legal. So I think that you know, that's sort of the history of it. I don't know what the federal government's going to do. The court decision was quite clear that you can't just willy-nilly undo that, and we'll see where that goes.
There have been a lot of protests, a lot of them at public schools all across Ohio, even here in Marion this week, in regard to ICE. We've certainly seen a lot of news with ICE in recent weeks. Is there a place for ICE in Ohio?
Yeah, it's what I was saying before. I mean, there's a long time precedent that you state, local officials work with federal officials on all sorts of issues. And I think the protest is coming because normally when those interactions happen, you have communication, you have transparency, you know what the mission is, you have accountability. If something goes wrong, you know what's going to happen. And I think what's happening here is there's just such a lack of transparency. If you look at other states, there's just you see law enforcement officials saying, we don't know what's happening, we aren't able to work together. And so I think, and this goes back to what Governor DeWine, I think, has said very well, which is, if someone is in Ohio doing work, we expect them to follow the same rules and to respect due process and to respect, you know, the Constitution, just like we'd expect local law enforcement and state law enforcement to do. And if that can happen, then I think there's all sorts of ways that you'll always work together. But if it can happen, as we're seeing, it makes things much more difficult, and it leads to citizens understandably saying, what's happening here? This doesn't feel like the type of law enforcement that actually we all feel keeps us safe. It's going the other direction. So I think that, and my sense is that conversation is now happening in Congress. It's bipartisan, and that and when you hear a Republican governor like Mike DeWine saying that, it's clear that I think people across the aisle see that there needs to be something done, so it's clear that the rules of the road are clear, the protocols are clear, the accountability is clear, obviously, and it's all more transparent. Because if that doesn't happen, like I said, it makes it difficult at all levels to have law enforcement do its job.
I want to stay on Governor DeWine just for one more second, because he and Dr. Acton obviously worked closely during the COVID pandemic, and in December, he defended her in an interview. He said, the decisions that were made during COVID, they were my decisions, so no one should blame someone else if they don't like it. The buck stops with me. What do you make of that comment from Governor DeWine?
I give him credit on that comment. I mean, if you take a look at all of this, the only thing that the Ramaswamy and even more ironically the Republican Party of Ohio seem to want to talk about with Amy Acton is COVID. But as Mike DeWine said, he was the governor through all of it. So the whole thing, every time they attack her, and this is the only thing they seem to want to bring up, the Republican Party of Ohio is attacking the Republican governor of Ohio. And to make it even more twisted, the current senator of Ohio who's on the ballot is John Husted. And Scott, you know that standing at every press conference with Mike DeWine and Amy Acton was John Husted. So it's a really bizarre scene that the Republican Party of Ohio is spending most of its time literally attacking their own governor and their own sitting U.S. senator.
Well,
and I think Mike DeWine, clearly in what you're describing, is seeing that and kind of calling it out. And you know, Mike DeWine, let's give him credit. I don't agree with him on everything. He actually, I think, led well. He got reelected by something like 26 points. And so I think he's saying, well, listen, we had to mix, you know, and this is what Andy Beshear said years ago. They were trying to save lives. Others played politics. And that's what's happening now. And I think Mike DeWine is saying, hey, I was the one in charge. If you're going to bring it up, know that I'm the one who made a lot of these, or I was, the buck stops with him, he's saying, and good for him. But I also think it points out the whole negative attack from them, which they're trying to wage against Dr. Acton, really kind of, it doesn't work very well, because the main person that they're essentially attacking is the current Republican governor of Ohio, as well as the lieutenant governor, the sitting U.S. senator who's trying to get reelected. So
well,
it's a very awkward line of attack for them, and I think DeWine saying that makes that very clear.
Well, and I think what was even more bizarre about it, and just to put a period on this particular subject, that interview was given by Mike DeWine, Governor DeWine, in December, and then less than a month later, on the same day that you were chosen as the lieutenant governor candidate and Rob McCauley was chosen as Ramaswamy's lieutenant governor candidate, that same day, Mike DeWine released a statement and said, with the election year upon us, I am joining Republicans right across Ohio in supporting our dynamic ticket for governor, led by Vivek Ramaswamy.
Yes.
Well, for two questions here. Why do you think he did that after saying less than a month earlier that he was not ready to do that? And why did this all happen in the same day? Both candidates choose their lieutenant governor candidates, and the governor endorses Ramaswamy that day.
You're getting into questions that I do not know the answer to on the timing. I did think it was interesting timing because the endorsement certainly didn't get much attention because it was the same day that the two of us were picked. Mike DeWine was very clear. He said for the last year, I will endorse the Republican candidate. He was very clear on that. He's a lifelong Republican. That was not a surprise at all. But it is interesting since, I mean, as you said with your prior question, here Ramaswamy and the Republican Party are spending almost every moment talking about COVID. Mike DeWine was the leader during COVID, and yet he endorses them, and they accept that. It kind of goes to the entire, when most of their attacks is against him, then he endorses them. They accept that, I assume. The whole thing doesn't really add up. And I think it does show that their whole sort of case against Dr. Acton is a very flimsy, ineffective one, and that's what we're seeing so far in polling and everything else. It's just not real when they are happy to accept the endorsement of the person who said to them, hey, I'm the one who did all this. So, yeah, the whole thing's awkward. But let me talk for a second about Rahm Emanuel, and I'll say this nicely, but, you know, in the last 5 years, we all know that the Ohio State House has become infamous as, if not the one of the most corrupt in America. We've got the first energy scandal playing out right now. We have the ECOT scandal, that for-profit charter school scam that, made millions by claiming to be teaching kids, but they couldn't actually prove the kids went to the school. We have speakers resign, one speaker in jail. I have spent the last 5 years, as you know, writing books and exposing just how corrupt the State House is and how much everyday Ohioans are paying the price for that corruption. You know, we pay higher energy bills because of the first energy scandal, for example. Our property taxes are higher because they're giving money away to these for-profit, scammy charter schools that don't actually teach kids well. By the way, one most recent one was $600 million to the Browns to move a stadium while schools are being cut. So I've spent my recent years trying to expose that and demand that we do better, and Amy Acton chooses me as her lieutenant governor candidate. And I'm honored to accept that. Vivek Ramaswamy picks the president of the Ohio Senate. So the one of the two leaders of the institution that is on HBO and featured in all other ways for all those problems. So one of the things far bigger than Mike DeWine's endorsement of Ramaswamy, I think when Ramaswamy picked McCauley, the current Senate president, it was basically a declaration that we're not changing anything. That this broken State House that's leading to so many of our problems is just going to keep leading the way because his lieutenant governor is one of the two leaders of that State House. So I do think that day where Mike DeWine endorsed Ramaswamy and where he picked McCauley was a very important day because it made very clear that the ticket of Dr. Acton and myself is all about change and breaking up what's a broken system. And on the other side, I think Ramaswamy made very clear with the DeWine endorsement and especially the McCauley pick, they are all about just continuing doing what we're doing. And most Ohioans, I think it's fair to say, do not think what we're doing works. We've got the first energy scandal. We've got the Browns deal. We've got all these other things. Costs are skyrocketing. Young people are leaving. And Vivek Ramaswamy just announced to the state, I'm good with all of it. In fact, I'm so good with it, I'm going to pick one of the two leaders of the institution that's driven us in the wrong direction for so long. So I think in that way, it was a very important day.
David, two minutes left here and two quick questions. When you were chosen as the lieutenant governor candidate, a lot of people said to me they had hoped you would run for governor at one point. It was talked about in periodicals. How much how much input would David Pepper have in a Dr. Acton gubernatorial administration?
I mean, I would say that we think of ourselves as partners, but I also would say that she's the governor and I'm the lieutenant governor and I'm there to support her. So, but I do think you'll, and she said that, I'm not speaking for her here, but she did say this, I think we will be close partners in it, knowing in the end, obviously, she's the governor and as Mike DeWine said about himself, the buck would stop with her, but I'm there to be sort of the wingman and co-pilot and partner as much as I can be and be helpful. So I'm excited to play a prominent role, not just in the campaign, but when it comes to governing. And we've worked together for some time. So we have a very good partnership in the way we work, and we're already seeing that now that I'm on the ticket.
And the final question today, thoughts on President Trump's tweet that featured the Obamas as apes in the video?
Oh, awful. Terrible. And I was glad that it wasn't just Democrats who said how bad that was. I'm glad that, and by the way, this is true on other issues. I'm glad that we're starting to see people across the board, including the congressman near Cincinnati on the Epstein files. I was glad to see some Republicans call out that tweet. I mean, it just was terrible. And I'm glad people called it out. I mean, there's not much more to say than that. It's just that level of vitriol is just unacceptable, and at least it was one that crossed the line so much that a lot of people called it out, and I'm glad they took it down.
Our guest in this segment has been David Pepper. He is the lieutenant governor candidate on the Democratic side, gubernatorial, headed by Dr. Amy Acton as we head into the fall. David, you've always been a pal. Thank you for coming on, and hopefully we see and talk to you as we go down the campaign trail.
And hopefully in person again. The birthday party you threw was still one of my favorite events the last year. So thanks for all you do, not just on air, but in person.
Thank you, David.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
I'll see you. Bye.
David Pepper, there you go. And that wraps it up for us today. We'll have our big surprise tomorrow. And I think that's about it. Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
Addictive families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad